Shepherd, Reel 6.
They opened the door, and what should I see but Edward Zeff. I knew it was Edward Zeff, but his face was absolutely swollen like a huge football ball, absolutely blue from knocks he received, head cut, hands cut, mouth bleeding. He looked at me and he said, they knew me. I had to tell them. Now, what had happened, I knew later. I was then taken away, and they told me, now, we know everything about you. You are Patrice. You know what happened to your friend. You see, the same thing will happen to you if you don't behave the proper way. And I said, I don't have to behave the right way or the proper way. First, the thing you have done to my friend is absolutely disgusting, and I have nothing to tell you. Say, all right, we'll see that. But what happened? I knew it later from Edward Zeff himself. The Gestapo in Paris was German, but most of their agents were French, member of the police. And Edward Zeff, who was he was until his life a very brave man, took his story completely like I did, Air Force, wireless operator, etc. And he had the unluck in one of the corridors of the Gestapo to find a French policeman of the French police in the area of Saint-Lazare. Edward Zeff, before the war, was a shirt maker in Rue de la Pépinière, which is just next to the Gare Saint-Lazare. And this policeman was in charge of the sector in the area and knew him perfectly well. He saw him and told him, what are you doing here? Not aggressively, with the hope of helping this old shopkeeper he knew before the war. Zeff said, I don't know you, and this didn't work with the police. Of course, he was member of the Gestapo, French, went to the chap and told them, but this is not, he was a shirt maker in Le Pépinière, he speaks French like you and me, and so on. And the operation started. It's pure unluck, extraordinary unluck for Zeff. Then there was nothing doing. They knew who we were. They kept me 3 days in this interrogation house. They wanted to know all sorts of things, which I didn't want to tell them. They especially wanted to know what I did after my escape, and they wanted to know precise thing on the organization of the SOE London. They knew Orchard Court already, because on the map, I remember, they showed me a map of London and they pointed out Orchard Court, which was, you probably know, one of our HQ. I heard that it was lended to us by Marks & Spencer, the big shop just at the back. And he pointed out on the map, you know this place? I said, no. But I realized that they knew quite a lot of things about SOE organization. Just for fun, I expect, because I had really not much to tell them, except that they wanted to know the training and all that. I said, I'm an officer. I had a military training and so on. And just for fun, they pulled not so fun for them. They pulled my thumbnail, toenail. I kept it as a souvenir. Do you want to see it? After that. See? And he never grew after. He's absolutely dead.
Even now we can see it's different.
It's totally different. It's they pulled it. It probably cut the root of the nail, and it grows like this, like uncontrolled element of the body. Because so, after that, I went back to my cell, and I could not clean it or anything like that. I went to concentration camp, and it stayed like this.
The nail on the big toe of your left foot.
Yes, that's it.
They just pulled it out.
They pulled it. They lift it like this, pull it out.
What with?
A pair of. I think it was. Really, put the question. The instrument itself. I had the impression at on a period like that, you don't look too much. I had the impression it was a purely normal pair of crimpers, flat crimpers. But they had all instruments in this place. Certainly, I only suffered from that and one or two slap on the face, but. There was a bathroom next to the office I was interrogated, and I voluntarily kept absolutely cool, dignity. I fought all that with an idea, with a view. I must show them, keep my dignity in all cases. And they kept me for 3 or 4 days, 3 days, I think.
So they showed you some instruments of
torture? No, they didn't show me, but I perfectly realized after that there was other things. And this famous bathroom, which they probably used for somebody else, because this is what happened. I was kept during the night when the Gestapo was not there. All the member interrogation, they were French chaps of the Gestapo, by two young Gestapo French police. And after 2 days, there was this bathroom. It was a private luxury house requisitioned by the Gestapo. There was this bathroom next to the office, which was probably previously a bedroom. And very early in the morning, I was talking to the guards, in fact. And I said, look, can I have a bath in that? Just like in French then, at the time, I was thinking. And they find it funny. I said, yes, why don't you? At the time, I didn't know at all. It's only after the war I knew that, the story of the bath for interrogation and so on. And very, very innocently, I undressed, took a bath, dried myself, and got back to the office, I felt quite nice. After all this, I had a bath in the Gestapo.
So
the at about 9 o'clock probably the Gestapo member of the interrogation team arrived, and the two chaps told them in laughing, they find it extremely funny, and the Gestapo member also, that I had taken a bath in the bathroom. And from what at the time it would be wrong to say that I realized, but knowing the story now of the bathroom, the joke they made on, by himself he took a bath, well, he could have another one, and so on and so on, I realized that it was probably in this bathroom or others, they knew how to use the bathroom. But I'm still extremely proud of having had the guts of telling the Gestapo, I want to take a bath, and I took a bath in this bathroom.
So the people present at the interrogation, were they all French or German? Or?
There was two Germans, one undoubtedly the boss, two Germans, and three, they went one after the other, three French, but absolutely French and with a Parisian accent. Were they real police or all this underground types of... half business police, you know, during the war there was quite a lot of underground police working with the Gestapo for profit. I have the impression it is more that type of Frenchman than real police. They had rings and things like that, very obviously doubtful characters.
And so you think they were just playing with you rather than seriously trying to get information?
Well, yes, because from me, what sort of information could they get? I was an instructor, they knew. An instructor doesn't know the details of the different réseau he instructs. They knew very much about the SOE and about all the, I realized that from the questions and interrogation. But they probably knew that I could not in fact give them except when they insisted on HQ, the Orchard Court training and so on, I simply refused them. They couldn't get much out of me. I was not responsible of a réseau. I was a young officer instructor, in fact, and I had no responsibility in recruiting and organizing réseau.
Did the person who took the nail off, was he a German or a French?
A French. Well, yeah, I think it was my impression what he was doing to do that, to do just like his boss. He was very proud of doing something. He had the German scene. It's an extraordinary type of mentality, all these people. Well, anyway, that was not finally very, very serious. But I wanted to keep all the way through my dignity of a British officer. I said, no, I don't want them to destroy my personality. I want to be something else. And this helped me right through concentration camp. I believe with friends like Brian Stonehouse, we always, although we were miserable, we were starving, we were dressed like clowns, we always wanted to keep dignified in front of everybody. It was the last part of the duty during our war, showing the people that we were still there. And I think many of our friends and comrades of camp of all nations remember this. I think it was a way of keeping the standard high. Difficult sometimes. Well, then after that, I was sent back to my cell and find my three French teachers back in my cell. And I arrived, of course, in a very poor state. And the chap who taught me French, he was a chemist. When I entered the cell, the German guards opened the cell. I entered on a very bad state, and he said, "Ah, Andrew," in a very slow French, "Andrew," because I was Andrew Frypen, "what has happened to you?" And suddenly, in good French, I said, "Now look, now I'm going to tell you the truth." You should have seen their face, suddenly speaking good French and explaining the situation. Ah, they were really good chaps. Eh? Sometimes one talks of the French collaborators and so on, but really I met extremely good Frenchmen in these conditions, very gentlemen all the way along. And very simple. There was a chemist, the other one was a bricklayer, I think, in the suburb of Paris. Very simple people. And the third one was the son of a guard of a cemetery. He's still alive, yeah. Else. And then came the time to go to Germany. We were called one day for what was called a transport, and we were informed that we were going to a camp, a certain amount of prisoners. I was mixed up with French and different types of including Edward Zeff, who joined me in a special cell in order to get ready to the what was called the transport. And one took the afternoon. One evening, we were transported by bus by police station car, special cars, to the Gare de l'Est in Paris and on to Germany. I had time to send a note to my fiancée at the time, stating that the time has passed and that I thought that my difficulties were over, because I knew I was going to be sent to a camp. And just this little letter shows that we, contrary to what many people say, we were not informed at all of the horror of concentration camp at the time. That was 1943.
Can you just say a little about what you said in that letter to prove that?
Yes, if I remember well, the letter is around here in the house. I informed my wife secretly, of course. This letter was a little piece of silk paper, toilet paper, in fact, written with a little piece of pencil, stating that I can now give news. I have been through the worst, the interrogation of the Gestapo, but they have probably decided not to shoot me. And I know that I'm going to be sent now to a camp in Germany, and therefore I believe that the worst part of my difficulties are over.
So it really shows that at that time you had no idea,
What camps were like. I was practically certain during all this period that one day I would be called, sent probably to a military court, condemned to death and shot the next day. I was really every day expecting this. And it was a relief when I heard that I was going to be sent to a camp. And that was the end of the letter. Now patience, and we certainly have already won the war. It's just a question of months or maybe a year or... And here we are. I was living happily to a camp in Germany. And the next morning was something else. We took the train at the Gare de l'Est, and we arrived at Saarbrücken. There we were surrounded by SS guards, and immediately... the atmosphere changed immediately. Knocks, shouts. We were entering the world of German concentration camp, which we didn't know. It was really entering a new life. We were absolutely shocked by the way they behaved, and we thought for a while, oh, well, it's only a few... soldiers, bad tempers, and so on. We did not realize what we were entering to. And we went to a small camp, which was a sort of waiting camp in order to be distributed to the different big camps in Germany. And we were sent to a camp called Neue Brehme, which is just outside Saarbrück. I went back to see it, and now there is a beautiful big hotel built on place of the camp. And there it was immediately, there was a sort of swimming pool in the middle of the camp. Immediately, some of them were sent all dressed in the swimming pool. We had to run around the swimming pool practically the whole day, jumping like frogs. Incredible way of beating the people. As far as I'm concerned, I had my first experience, and there it was difficult to keep steady. At the roll call in the afternoon, they called me out of the rank. And they said, ah, you are the British officer. They sind der britische Offizier. And I said, yes. And they started slapping me in the face. And they said, now, you get in dress. Now, after a few weeks or months in camp, getting in dress was nothing at all. We lived like that. But just imagine for us just coming out of normal life. Even prison then seemed to us normal life. Getting in dress suddenly in the afternoon, and I was absolutely necked. And they said, take this shovel. I took a shovel, wooden shovel, and come with us. And they had all the camp watching. And there was the toilets, the latrine, which was in fact a huge hall in the ground with two planks with perforation. And they simply told me, go down. And they put me, pardon me, I was really in the shit for the rest of 2 days. Because my job was to empty the whole thing with a shovel in two buckets, which were kept by others. But I was the only one with a Belgian minister to go down, and we stayed there to empty the thing with people using the thing, and still the whole day emptying. They wanted to destroy us by all sorts of means. I never heard of such a thing to others. They suddenly had, it was not, I don't think it was prepared. They simply had ideas like this. There are British officers. All right, we put him in the shit. Pardon me, but it's exactly what probably thought. And they find it funny. All the officers came around. The Englander is there. And here we were. We emptied it. I don't have to tell you the way we were when we got out and the stink around. It was terrible. But still, we lived through things like that. Another young chap, a Jew, was sent into the water, out of the pond, back in the pond. He was nearly dead. He went with us to Mauthausen. He was killed a few days after arrival in Mauthausen. Then after that, I was allowed a shower, finally. And we were sent to the concentration camp of Mauthausen. I knew at the time, seeing my paper, that I was classified NN, Nachtnebel, to disappear. That was, in their view, no hope for the man sent to a concentration camp with a trademark NN to come back. Our only hope to come back was to win the war, that was all. But it was a sort of, in their view, it was condemned to death, but used the last strength of the person to help the war effort of the Third Reich. That was the idea of the NN. Why should we kill them now when they can still do something for us until they die? We arrived in Mauthausen, and I don't think I have to enter details of concentration camps. It is what everybody knows from films and pictures and photographs, and starving and death and bodies and corpses of all sorts. But I would add something to that. What one sees today are films, photos, drawings, etc. But what one cannot realize is the, apart from this, which was a usual view for us, it's the distress and the daily life in concentration camp. After a certain period, corpses, bodies, dead, you don't see them. It is horrible to say that, But you live with it. You don't see them. Someone dead, you just walk over. It is no more a dead. It's part of the normal life in concentration camps. This is the horror of it. They wanted us to be beasts, and they nearly, and for certain, they reached it. No more dignity, no more human behavior. But the worst part is this daily life. When you wake up in the morning and you don't know if you're going to be alive in the evening, it is a permanent attention to your surrounding. And this cannot be explained by photos, film, books. It gives an idea, but the inside life of a concentration camp inmate, it's something of a complete daily distress. It's terrible. Of course, I saw all sorts of dead and torture and suicide, starvation. When I arrived, I was sent to the stone quarry, that is carrying stones on the shoulders, extracting stones. And the worst part in Mauthausen is that there is a well-known today steps cut in the stone quarry to come down and up of 186 steps. And coming up the steps with a stone on your back, day after day, wound on your shoulders, is something absolutely terrible, frightening. And many inmates died of falling from the steps under the knocks of the SS. And not only the SS, also the inside organization of the camp, because this is where the SS were witty on the way they organized. It's practically not the SS who were the killers inside the camp. It is what we call the Green Triangle, that is the Germans condemned to prison or fortress, which were sent to concentration camp in order to be the brutes inside the camp for the political and resistant people and Jews. Because the camp, as you probably know, had all sorts of classification with red triangles, green triangles, violet triangles, black triangles, and red and yellow triangles for the Jews. It is another long story, in fact, which has nothing to do with your proper interview. That is, we are a few SOE who have been through that. Many disappeared in camp, were killed in Mauthausen. Janice Blum and many others were killed after I left Mauthausen for Natzweiler. They arrived from another camp. Yes, SOE paid a long, large credit to concentration camp life. Up to the end, four of our girls were killed in Natzweiler. Four others were killed in Dachau, girls courier or wireless operator. The famous Nori Nayat Khan was killed in Dachau.